Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday morning. It's June 16th, 61 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 59 degrees at the Heber City Airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch. Back on this Tuesday, we're looking at lots of sunshine, but we will have some scattered clouds building in across the sky. So we'll call it partly sunny skies as we go throughout the day. Temperatures will still be fairly warm as we climb into the low to mid 80s for us. In Park City today, we'll see those highs climbing right around 90 degrees this afternoon in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Wednesday hump day for us, we're looking at lots of sunshine expected. Temperatures staying on the warm side. We'll see those highs in the low 80s for us in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 80s to near 90 in the Heber Valley. Now, keep in mind, both today and tomorrow, we're going to be seeing some breezy winds coming in out of the north and west, and especially on the eastern facing slopes here of the mountains there, we could have elevated fire danger threat. So keep that in mind. We'll be looking at the breezy conditions, downsloping winds, which dries the air out, and those dry fuels already in place. So conditions will be ripe for fires here over the next couple of days. Now, as we go into your Thursday, those winds will lessen a little bit. We'll see lots of sunshine. Temperatures still staying pretty warm. Highs in the mid-80s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures in the low 90s in the Heber Valley. The warmest day looks to be on Friday. Our Juneteenth looks to be sunny with sunshine in the place and dry air in place. We're going to be looking at those temperatures in the mid to upper 80s for highs in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the low to mid-90s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we move into your busy holiday weekend, we'll start to see some slightly cooler air filtering back into the area. So I've got high temperatures only in the upper 70s for your Saturday and Sunday in Park City with lots of sunshine. We'll see those high temperatures in the mid-80s in the Heber Valley dropping into the low 80s for your Sunday. Of course, Sunday happens to be Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to the fathers out there. And of course, it's the beginning of the summer solstice. So, yeah, get ready. Officially, summer arrives with some slightly cool air before we warm it back up heading into next week. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaum. We'll be taking a look at the agenda for Wednesday's meeting. The founder of Summit Support, John Davis, is joined by Melissa Zimmerman, Executive Director of Jewish Family Service, and Executive Director of Christian Center of Park City, Steve Richardson, talking about a gathering June 18th to honor people who volunteer their time for nonprofit organizations. And finally, Recycle Utah Executive Director Andy Heck and Board Member Scott Beck with the latest from the Recycling Center and the planned move. Taking a look now at some local news, a judge has tossed out most of the defamation lawsuit an ex-Park City school operations officer brought against a local journalist. As KPCW's Connor Thomas reports, the case will now turn on claims the reporter made in social media posts.
Michael Tanner and Michelle Deininger will head to court over whether the former Park City school district chief operating officer indeed threatened Deininger's life. Tanner sued Deininger, who's now a retired journalist, for defamation last July. The lawsuit took issue with more than a dozen statements she made about him in her reporting and on social media. That includes claims that he threatened her. In a June 12th ruling, 3rd District Judge Richard Mrazek narrowed the scope of Tanner's lawsuit and threw out the majority of his allegations. The judge says Tanner can only continue to sue over some of what Deininger said on Facebook, not what she reported in a November 2024 freelance story published by the Park Record. Deininger initially sought to dismiss the case under Utah's version of a law that wards off frivolous lawsuits against protected speech. So during the first round of oral arguments, Mrazek said his ruling would be a technical one and litigation may continue on whichever of Tanner's claims survive.
It's important to remember that the court's ruling is not going to be a final finding of fact regarding what was true and what was not true, and what was defamatory and what was not defamatory.
The Park Record story raised concerns about Tanner's compensation and authorization to work remotely during ongoing construction and district controversies. Tanner believes the story was inaccurate, contributed to him losing his job, and hurt future job prospects. His defamation suit seeks at least $300,000 in damages from Deininger. He did not sue the Park Record. Mrazek says Tanner cannot sue over the story, in large part because he was allowed to work remotely during the controversies that Dininger describes. She also reported that Tanner made $394,000 annually when he was paid $354,000. Mrazek doesn't think the larger figure could be defamatory since the gist is the same. That is, Tanner was, quote, highly compensated. It remains to be seen whether Dininger's social media posts in the year following the article's publication were defamatory. That includes Dininger telling another Facebook user, quote, Tanner told a City Hall employee he wanted to kill me, unquote. She also alleges other district employees were afraid of Tanner and alleges there existed new whistleblower allegations against him. Tanner's sworn court statements say those posts are false. First Amendment attorney Michael Judd, who is not involved in the case, tells KPCW that's frequently all that a plaintiff needs to do to keep their case alive.
The plaintiff's burden is going to increase as the case goes on. Out the gate, all you really need to say is these statements were false and they're not opinions, and so therefore I should be able to go forward with my case.
Dininger's attorney Jeff Hunt told KPCW his team is pleased Mrazek tossed out the defamation claims directly related to the article, adding that he looks forward to defending Dininger's social media commentary in court. Tanner's attorney, Ryan Bell, could not be reached for comment Monday. An email response to KPCW's inquiry states Bell was out of town. Dininger began covering the Park City School District in 2021, culminating in the November 2024 story in the Park Record, for which she won a statewide award for investigative journalism. She was an editor and later news director at KPCW from 2021 to 2023. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Wasatch County Council meets tomorrow starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting is County Manager Dustin Graybow. Good morning, Dustin.
Good morning, Leslie.
So given the hot and very dry weather, just curious why Wasatch County hasn't instituted any fire restrictions for the unincorporated portions of the county.
Yeah, and talking about fire district, there are a number of metrics that they use to evaluate when fire warnings are appropriate. There are 7 different, and I honestly couldn't tell you all of them, but we've only reached 2 of them. And so they kind of feel like because the governor has made a declaration, we have some leverage there in terms of messaging, encouraging people to conserve their water, but we haven't really reached the threshold just yet. I think we do expect to reach that threshold, but it's not here yet.
Okay. Before, you think it'll reach the threshold, though, before 4th of July?
Yeah, I think it's likely, given that we have very little rain in the forecast right now. And once we reach certain measures in terms of, it has to do with the moisture level found in the surrounding mountain areas and the temperatures and things like that.
All right. Taking a look at the agenda, there will be a presentation from the victim's advocate. And what was interesting here, maybe just explain what the victim's advocate is and who's making this presentation.
Yeah, so victim advocates are part of the criminal justice system in that the county provides support to victims of crimes. So the county has a full-time staff member and another staff member that's a grant-funded position that we use to help support victims and to maintain a connection between the prosecutors who want to prosecute the perpetrators against these victims and so that they can coordinate testimonies and evidence and make sure that they get resources and access to food and shelter and things like that.
Okay, and so because of that financial support, they're required to come make reports to the council?
Yeah, so these are actually county employees, and they annually make a report to the council kind of on the status of our victim advocacy and kind of progress updates of the things that they've done.
Yeah.
Some of this is required for grants.
Sure. And I guess what I found interesting is that more than half of the crimes committed are domestic violence related. So what's being done to try and do some outreach, some education here?
You know, there's a lot of different avenues. Our health department is particularly looking at mental health issues that are a large contributing factor to some of these things. And the state, over the last few years, has required what's called a criminal justice coordinating council. And this is a combination of law enforcement, attorney's offices, mental health providers, healthcare providers, with the intent of trying to take a holistic approach to crime offenders and victims. And so that Criminal Justice Coordinating Council has made a number of changes and recommendations. We do programs in the jail, treatment programs, work release programs, and other things to try and make sure that we are doing the most we can to reduce recidivism and to address our issues in the county.
All right. Let's see. The council was set to approve an AI resolution. Once again, it's being taken off the agenda. What's the holdup here?
I think it's just an abundance of caution that we want to make sure that the AI landscape is changing so rapidly, and making sure that, you know, we're adopting things that allow us to be flexible, but continue to protect, you know, not just the county, but also the public and the people that are using our resources, and making sure that anything that we do kind of falls in line with any data privacy protections, and it ends up being more complicated maybe than initial first glance might assume.
All right. Later on, there will be discussion and consideration of approving a county boundary adjustment with Utah County. Does this have anything to do with that preliminary municipality application?
You know, actually, this is a separate issue related to an approval that was granted, you know, nearly a century ago by the county commissions of Utah and Wasatch County, trying to fix up some parcel lines that the county boundary split. And so this is a ratification of that original approval so that we can submit it to the Lieutenant Governor's office and clean up just what that boundary looks like and kind of some of the more mountainous areas. So it is adjacent to, I guess, the Bear Canyon development or in that same vicinity, but it's not directly related to it.
All right. And how did it come to light 100 years later?
So it came up in just our coordination with Utah County, because Wasatch County has actually been using the approved but not recorded boundary line that follows the parcel boundaries. And Utah County, for the last couple decades, actually went back to using the original boundary line. So what that left is some parcels were being subject to both counties' property taxes, and some parcels were being ignored entirely. And so this is an effort to clean up that issue.
All right, later on, a discussion, and then looking for some policy direction regarding the public comments that the county received during the review period for the draft general plan. What are some of those comments that the council will consider?
You know, overall, we had a lot of really positive feedback. I think the new general plan, again, doesn't reflect a dramatic change in direction for the county, but what I think it does reflect is a more succinct and direct distillation of the county's policy priorities. And I think it does a really good job. Our staff have put in a lot of work to get it to where it is now. And so I think what we're looking for from the council is kind of a confirmation that they agree with the direction that we're heading on, that they don't have any concerns with the policies and priorities that are identified in the general plan. And then we can move forward with codifying it, which then will kick off our actual code rewrite process.
Okay, and that's, again, expected to be completed by end of year?
Actually, we were working that it could be as soon as next month that we're presenting it to the Planning Commission and County Council for a formal adoption.
Awesome. All right, later on, a discussion and consideration of Ordinance 26-07 that would amend affirmative defense. What does this mean? And what does it do?
Yeah, so this is actually the third version of this ordinance that we've reviewed with the council. The previous versions, the council was considering some requests from members of the public related to fencing in and fencing out laws. At our last meeting where we discussed this, council asked us to basically table the fencing portion, but to retain this affirmative defense portion. And so what the affirmative defense portion does, I think our county attorney and our office doesn't feel like it is a really big change. What it does is it clarifies that if someone's doing a regular agricultural practice, they would not be subject to, a claim against them in terms of harming animals illegally. For instance, if you are branding an animal, obviously that does impart some discomfort to the animal, but that's a normal agricultural practice, and that would be what's called an affirmative defense, which means that you have the assumption that that is being handled appropriately and that you won't have to defend yourself in court if you are doing that also applies to regular veterinarian practice or scientific research or things of that nature. Or if you are putting down an animal in a normal way that is appropriate given the agricultural setting, those are all things that you basically don't need to worry about defending yourself in court if you're doing.
All right. And then there's a couple of public hearings at 6 o'clock. One of them is on a code text amendment to remove a viewing platform from the water near the middle of the north arm of the Jordanelle Reservoir. Why does this need to be removed?
So this is a way in which we administer our ridgeline ordinance. So the idea behind ridgeline ordinances is that you want to protect the ridgeline so that man-made structures don't break these ridgelines. But the way in which you administer that creates just challenges. And so right now, one of the viewing platforms that's identified as a ridgeline, so you kind of identify specific areas, and then from view, you use the view of that as the definition of what is breaking the ridgeline. Because if you're standing right next to a house and looking up at a ridgeline, obviously that house is going to block it, so you have to get some distance from it. So what the county's identified is a number of viewing platforms, but this particular viewing platform is in the middle of the Jordanelle Reservoir, and so it's particularly challenging and difficult to be consistent with where you're viewing that from and the logistics of, if it's a winter month or not. Maybe that's easier, maybe that's harder given certain circumstances. So the debate has been whether it's being moved or removed. I believe the Planning Commission's recommendation was to make no changes. And so we'll be passing that recommendation along to the council tomorrow.
Okay. And speaking of kind of the dry, hot weather, any updates with regard to watering restrictions?
I do know that our special service districts have notified all of the users of water restrictions. They have explained basically the reduced portion of the shares that people will get and encouraged people to go above and beyond and conserve more than that, because I think we expect to receive only a small fraction of the amount of water that is typical for our county.
All right. Moving on, wanted to ask you a little bit about the Maverick Rock mining application. This is a major industrial mining expansion in the mountains overlooking the Heber Valley. Is this a done deal, or where are we at in the process?
So county originally refused to hold the public hearing because we didn't feel like this application met state code. Through the litigation process at the local level, I think we and maybe the majority of the state were surprised that the judge ruled against the county and kind of required that we held the public hearing that we had several weeks ago. So I don't think it's a done deal. The county has already filed our appeal to the Court of Appeals. We have a case number, and we think that the judge got it wrong. I think most of the state thinks that this is not an appropriate interpretation of state code. But because of that original court ruling, we are proceeding through the process as required by state code. So what that has looked like over the last few weeks is we received the operational plan after we held our public hearing and made findings of public endangerment to health, safety, and welfare. And we collected those comments from both our own hired experts and members of the public who submitted comments, trying to identify mitigation measures that we could require through this process. Again, these are reasonable measures as outlined in state code. We can't go above what state standards are for these types of permits. But what we are trying to do is ensure that they comply with those standards. And so we have submitted our written response back to Maverick Rock, who then we have to schedule a public hearing within the next 30 days for them to basically accept or potentially reject those mitigation measures that we've requested. So within the next 30 days, we'll have a public hearing on that process, but that will happen in parallel with our appeal because, again, I don't think this is what the state legislature intended the state code to be able to do. And I think we have that sense from other gravel pit operators and other mine operators that this is just a bridge too far.
So when you're talking about those mitigation standards, you're talking about how to protect the groundwater, the blasting, the dust, the truck traffic.
Yes, all of those things are kind of the factors. The council made findings related to, you know, air quality, water quality, safety, public safety, other welfare issues. And so air quality is a high up there. Water quality, Danielstown has a wellhead immediately adjacent to this that is part of a major source of drinking water for the town. And so we have a lot of concerns about what a mine would do if they were to contaminate or dewater that area. That could significantly affect the town of Daniel, and something that we think is a reasonable request for them to mitigate.
Okay, and I guess I'm just a little bit confused. I mean, you did mention that there is some legislation that is kind of bringing us to a head. My understanding is that the mining company needs to prove that the mineral or the metal line is one continuous line up from its existing mine. And that's like located in Goshen, Utah, is that correct?
Yes, yes, it's quite far away. And they had hired a geologist who said that it's very, their geologist felt like there was some probability that that was contiguous. Our geologist said it's unlikely that it's contiguous, and even if it is, it's probably deeper than Kennecott is. And so we felt like this is not. But when we had that public hearing, this is just a few months ago, the owner said they could open a mine on Main Street in Heber if there was this same mineral deposit, and there's nothing Heber City or Wasatch County or any other entity could do to stop them. I think that is exactly the type of abuse of the state code that we don't feel like was intended by the legislature. And I don't think that's what the code really says, even. We have debated that. Now, the judge ruled against the county, which, again, we don't think is a fair interpretation of the code, which is why we're appealing it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I had to look it up. I didn't know where Goshen was, but it's like south. It's south of Santaquin, southwest of Santaquin. So it's like south of Utah Lake. It's a ways away, yeah. So what is it?
Yeah, and we have records that they intend to do this very same thing in additional sites in Wasatch County, and they have done the same thing in Saratoga Springs, same company. So this is, I think we feel like it's an important precedent of this is not what the state code was meant to do.
Hmm. So what is it they're mining for?
I believe their application was for blue limestone and some other minerals that they feel like they had access to in Goshen.
Okay. So again, we're waiting for that public hearing to be set within the next month, 30 days, you said?
Yeah, within the next 30 days, it may end up being part of our July 1st meeting, given that it will be over 30 days that our third meeting in July would be typical. So we will try and publicize the information related to that meeting when we schedule that.
All right. And are public comments being accepted at this point or only there at the public hearing?
I mean, at any time, the council can email us at publiccomment@wasatch.utah.gov. But specifically for the public hearing, that will be a public hearing. We will take public comment at that meeting. And that's one of the considerations is if we need to maybe change venues, because this is an issue that I think a lot of our constituents have a lot of concern for, and we want to be able to facilitate their input on this issue.
All right. Dustin, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, not this morning.
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, a volunteer event is being held June 18th at the Park City Library to honor nonprofit volunteers. In the studio with details, I have John Davis, founder of Summit Support, also with Melissa Zimmerman, Executive Director of Jewish Family Service, and Steve Richardson, Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
John, let's start with you, and maybe for listeners who are not familiar with Summit Support, tell us about your organization and its mission.
So Summit Support basically has two missions. One is to bring mental health out of the darkness as much as we can. We know there's a lot of stigmas and myths attached to it. And we want to normalize things. And the second is to support the very fine agencies that employ clinicians up here in Summit County. to do their job better, and we support them by doing various functions such as open houses and seminars, workshops, etc.
Yeah. So how long has Summit Support been around?
2 years.
Okay.
We partner with the Summit County, their Mental Wellness Alliance. So the two of us work together.
Okay, how so? I mean, what is it?
Well, I can tell you that it's a very, very nice collaboration between the private enterprise and government. And there are certain things that the county can do that I can't do, and there's certain things I can do that the county can't do. And so they have a reach, and we have a reach, and together we've been successful. This year, we just finished up our May Mental Health Month, where we had 13 events that we either promoted or sponsored or originated to benefit the mental health community.
Yeah, so can you share maybe a success story that kind of illustrates how the impact that Summit Support has had in the community?
I would say that we're getting more people to, I hear more people just talking about, I went to a therapist, or I'm thinking about going to a therapist. You wouldn't hear this kind of talk a couple of years ago. So it's very heartening, because a lot of people are afraid to get therapy. A lot of people deny therapy. So we're trying to make a dent in that.
Hmm. What are some of the most pressing mental health needs that you are seeing?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, there's the common one. There's depression. There's anxiety, of course. And you have teenage suicide. That's the biggest cause for deaths among teenagers. And of course, then you have manic depressive and bipolar, schizophrenia, etc. But I would say the common ones are anxiety and depression.
Hmm. All right. Well, as I mentioned, there is going to be a volunteer appreciation event this week. That's Thursday. Can you talk a little bit about the purpose of the event?
Yeah, it's essentially to thank our volunteers. They're so important. They really strengthen the connection between the mental health agencies and the community. To tell them we appreciate their jobs, and to encourage volunteerism in people that haven't done it before.
So who are the volunteers being recognized?
Well, we have volunteers from eight of the agencies that are up here. You want me to name them? Okay. Well, on my left side is Steve Richards from the Christian Center and Park City Christian Center. On my right side, Melissa Zimmerman from Jewish Family Services. There's also Peace House. There is also Live Like Sam. There is also Holy Cross Ministries, Jackie's Recovery. Of course, there's the People's Health Clinic, and I've probably forgotten one or two, but there's eight of them. We'll have eight people that we can honor, and we're hoping that they all bring their families too.
Okay, so they've been invited already then, Steve? Or, I mean, you've got a list of your volunteers?
They have. We really want to focus on honoring those who are already doing the good and encouraging others that they can do something good. You know, we think of just the good thing I can do is go to therapy myself. But to be able to normalize it, to be able to encourage others, to be able to provide a sense of hope, a sense of acceptance, that volunteers are crucial to what we do in the therapeutic world, whether it's just through supporting little events, whether it's supporting being there to welcome people as they come into a center, or so many other things that really increase mental health. And so it's not just the traditional. We're not asking volunteers to be therapists. We have therapists. We need people who love others.
Certainly, and that's just kind of one of the aspects that the Christian Center takes on with your counseling center.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how about for the Jewish Family Service, Melissa? What sort of mental health benefits does your agency provide?
We provide affordable mental health counseling. We also have services for older adults and their caregivers, which include mental wellness as a primary focus. So we also, similar to the Kirshen Center, have staff, have licensed clinicians providing therapy for a number of issues, serving across the lifespan from as early as birth to five all the way through older adult, and offering a variety of different evidence-based modalities. So really being able to help people, kind of meeting them wherever they're at in their life and providing the service that will help them meet their goals.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess, and how would you separate what you do from what the Kirshen Center does?
Well, I think there's a lot of overlap. I think our missions are similar in that we're out there trying to help people be the best versions of themselves. We have a location up here in Park City, and then we also have our location down in Salt Lake. But I think, like many of the other nonprofits up in this area and beyond, you know, we're all pretty united in that we want people to be as happy and healthy as possible. We're employing people with the skills and abilities to be able to help people reach that next step. Whether they're just feeling stuck in life or they're dealing with a major issue like anxiety, depression, some of the other issues that John mentioned.
All right. So therapy is available through you here at a Park City location.
Yes. We have a sliding scale fee that is really generous in addition to taking Medicaid and self-pay options.
All right. So what do volunteers, though, do? Because, you know, when you think of therapy, you think, I mean, it's kind of one-on-one, right? I mean, where do volunteers fit into that? Steve, you want to take that?
Yeah, I can start with that. So some of it is just greeting clients, making them feel welcome. Some of it's just helping us to clean up the space so it makes it look beautiful for others. Some of it's cleaning up the records or helping us to make photocopies. And then some things are like helping us to set up for a group, you know, so a relationship enhancement, a parenting class, a grief workshop. We have a peer support training that's happening next month. And so it takes a lot of work to put on those type of events. And so to help set up chairs, to help set up tables, to maybe help to cut up some strawberries and just to make it special, because we want people to feel special. Every time they walk in to get help, we want them to feel valuable and important, and that's half the goal right there.
Yeah, and for you, Melissa, I mean, how do volunteers help your organization?
Yeah, so mental health counseling is just one of the pieces of the work that we do. We have an on-site food pantry at our Salt Lake office, so we have volunteers every single day in our pantry. Honestly, without our volunteers, we would probably not be able to operate. We rely on them so heavily. We usually have 5 or 6 volunteers per day in our pantry, helping stock shelves, helping make bags, helping greet customers, all of that. We also have another critical program called the Friendly Visitor Program, which is a program which a volunteer goes into a older adult's home, provides companionship, helps to run errands. And that's another critical service that we just don't have enough people on staff that we'd be able to do. So we have wonderful volunteers that dedicate themselves to helping these people out.
Mm-hmm. John, maybe you want to talk a little bit about that. Is Summit Support kind of the clearinghouse then of these volunteers, or?
No, not really. No, we're not a clearinghouse. We don't offer therapy. We just support the agencies. And I would tell you one thing. The agencies are very unique up here in Park City. They in the sense that they get along so well, they collaborate. You know, in many communities, agencies are in competition with each other. That isn't the case here.
All right. So how can community members get involved if they are interested in volunteering with organizations that support mental wellness?
Well, they can come to the event this Thursday, 5:30 at the library, the third floor, and they can hear what these agencies do, and then there'll be some information tables. They can sign up, and they can talk to different agencies and find out what's available as far as volunteering. One of the things that volunteers do is they make people feel that they're not alone, and that in itself is so important.
Okay, so it sounds like it's open to anybody who may be interested in helping.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And Melissa, I guess if somebody is listening today and struggling or know somebody who is, I mean, what is a first step they could take to help get that help and support?
Definitely checking out our website to look at some of our resources. That's jfsutah.org. We have a Get Help tab on there that allows people who are interested in mental health services to get connected to a counselor. It's also where you'd find volunteer opportunities. It's on our website.
Okay, and Steve?
Yeah, same. We're at the Christian Center of Park City, so ccfpc.org. Check it out. See if there's any of the counselors that you really connect with. And then realize that we, all of these nonprofits, all of these services are here for everybody. It should be the start of a bad joke that the head of Jewish Family Services in the Christian Center walked into a radio station. But it's not. It's the story of Park City. It's the fact that we work together, that we support each other, that we love each other, and we just want the best for everybody in our community.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, John?
No. I think we've said it all.
Okay, that's Thursday, June 18th, 5:30 p.m. Again, Volunteer Appreciation Event. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In the studio now with an update from Recycle Utah, I have Executive Director Andy Heck, along with board member and a member of the Visioning Committee, Scott Beck. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Andy, this time last year, Recycle Utah announced that it would be closing its center at the end of this month, and you now have some breathing room. How much time are we talking about?
Yeah, we've been pretty happy with all of our partners involved. The city gave us an extension till March. We've been working so hard on what the new facility will be, how it's going to function, what it's going to look like. With the help of Scott Beck and many other board members, we have some really neat plans moving forward.
Okay, so Scott, there was a survey done. How many responses did you get?
Last time I checked, it was almost 600. Mm-hmm. As of last week when we met as a board. And all that feedback, you know, including feedback from the staff and other members of the community, really helped inform the vision that has been developed for this new facility, which is tremendously exciting.
Yeah, what were you asking?
We were asking, you know, what kind of services that they use, what they'd like to see, what's important to them, all kinds of different things. Actually, the survey is still available on our website, so our listeners, your listeners and the community can still participate in providing their feedback.
Yeah, you can access that through recycleutah.org.
Okay, so what is like the number one service that people use?
Number one is the, you know, the forward-facing public drop-off of recyclable materials. We take over 50 different items, so many of those items are not what you can put into your curbside bin. Please make sure you do not put batteries in your curbside bin. Bring us your glass. We take food waste, but there's a bunch of other materials we accept. You can go onto our website and see the list of all of those. So that, by far, is the most center program we do at the center.
Mm-hmm. And especially kind of those cords, right? Those electric cords that you get with every little appliance.
Yeah,
right?
E-waste, cords, yeah. Old TVs, printers, everything.
There is a charge, though, for some of the larger items.
Yeah, you know, some of the things like television sets, they are really expensive. A big thing we should always be mindful of, that when you bring recyclable materials to Recycle Utah, they almost always cost us money. So please leave a buck when you're dropping things off. But for some of the more expensive items like televisions that we, you know, have to pay to recycle appropriately, yeah, we do charge a small fee. It's like, for a 55-inch television, I think it's like $15.
All right. So what are some of the services people would like to see?
Well, diving in, a big one is education. We do an amazing outreach and education program. We interact with about 7,000 students across all of Summit County every year. And currently we don't have the space or the facility to run education and information programs at Recycle Utah. So that's another really big component of what we're looking at constructing.
I think people are also very interested in us being able to make a larger impact. You know, we're currently diverting about 2,000 tons of recyclable material each and every year at Recycle Utah. And with this new facility, when it comes online, we'll immediately be able to do about four times that. And over time, we'd hope to double that number again as we get, you know, sort of fully up to the fully envisioned sort of dream state of our new facility.
Yeah, so how far along are you with the new space and designing something?
Well, here's where we're getting really excited, because we're nearing the end of the design phase. With everyone's input, we wanted to make sure that we took the time to design something that really is needed in this community, and we are targeting August 22nd to be able to share what we've been working on with the community. Show everyone what we're thinking, how we're going to do this, lay out the roadmap, and get this thing built.
All right. And we're talking phases, right?
Not traditional phases. Mm-hmm. Because we are out of our facility this March, we are looking at how we are going to operate out of a temporary facility on our property. But the whole construction will be one go. We're going to build a warehouse and the administration building in front. And it's not phased construction that you see in traditional phased construction.
Right. So where's the money coming from?
Well, we do have a small reserve that will get us going. We're putting together a capital stack, and a lot of that depends on the generosity of this amazing community in the Wasatch Back. And we'll be announcing more of those plans on August 22nd.
Okay, so there's some special event that's happening then?
Yeah, it's our 100 Mile Meal, which is an amazing program. And it's a great time and place to kick this next phase off on sharing what we've been working on. August 22nd. Tickets will go on sale July 6th is the target word date to drop the tickets for 100 Mile Meal.
All right. So as you kind of make the move, we had heard a year ago that Recycle Utah would be offering more neighborhood recycling drop-off sites. Is that still the plan? And can you tell us where you are, if so?
Well, right now, that's something that the county has really been taking on. Jana and Tim at the county have created some drop-off stations around the county that are just beginning to come online. I don't want to speak on behalf of them because I don't want to give the wrong information on where they are and what they take, but those are coming online right now.
Okay. And Andy, I kind of saw you meeting with Summit Community Gardens, and you've also been asking about photos for the Sun Valley Chomper, which is kind of an incinerator, as I recall. I mean, so what are you looking at? I mean, what are you trying to get information about?
That's funny, Leslie. I saw you there working on your garden plot. hope everything's growing just fine for you out there.
Yeah.
So part of the visioning process was reaching out to nonprofit partners. With a new facility built from the ground up, we have the ability to include other nonprofits and other community members as stakeholders in this project. Natural synergies happen across multiple organizations, one of them being Summit County Community Gardens / Eats. Separate from that, when we took a leadership class up to Sun Valley, we stopped in Bellevue at a nonprofit called the Hunger Coalition. They had this machine called Chompy. Chompy is an amazing food waste processor. It's an aerobic digester, and people bring their household food scraps, dump it in one end, and then shortly thereafter, it creates some compost. And it's a really neat machine. We all really like that. I know there were a lot of photographs taken of it, and a lot of listeners right now are probably saying, Chompy, yes, bring that to our community, because it's a neat device.
Is that what you hope to put at the new location, something like that?
It depends on the pricing. We have the space requirements for that, but we're just scratching the surface on these types of elements that we can put into the design.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, Scott, as you kind of look ahead, I mean, 6, 7, 8, 9 months, right?
Yeah.
To make this move, is there going to be something there in March that people are going to be able to access?
Yeah, that's certainly our goal, and sort of our commitment to the community is to have something on location at our new site, which is behind Home Depot, where we'll be operating temporarily. So there'll be no disruption in service while we're sort of designing the final phase of the new project and bringing it online with construction over the next couple of years.
Okay, anything else you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about two events that we have coming up here pretty soon. One is a new group that we formed about a month ago. It was a really successful first meeting. It's Zero Waste Wasatch Back. We're meeting Monday, June 22nd at 6:30 p.m. at Fulfilled at the Junction Commons location of Fulfilled. And then our incredibly popular program called Green Drinks on July 14th from 6 to 8 at Deer Meadows Ranch in Camas. That might be a new location for a lot of the listeners. It sounds like an absolute beautiful place. And this is going to be pretty neat. We have Emily Quinton from the Summit County coming to talk. And then we have someone from Utah Clean Energy coming to talk about something called balcony solar power. Balcony solar power is pretty cool. It's taken over Europe. A lot of European nations, you see a lot of these solar units going up on the, mostly on balconies. You can put them anywhere. But and there's only one state in the entire United States of America that allows balcony solar units to operate. And we're in it, Utah. Utah allows these balcony solar units that are more or less plug and play, from my understanding. And we'll have someone from Utah Clean Energy talking and informing us about these balcony solar units.
Yeah. Well, I take one camping, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about.
These are a little bit more advanced than some, because they plug into your outlets and they can, I don't want to go outside of my knowledge area, but they do plug into your electrical system in your home.
Okay. Again, those green drinks, you do charge a small fee just to make sure that people show up.
This one is free, but you do have to register. We do have a higher capacity at this one, but they always sell out. And even with the higher capacity, please register in advance.
Okay. And then this Zero Waste Wasatch Back Group, tell me a little bit more about what that group's doing.
Yeah, so this is a group, I think the inception of it was from the Zero Waste Forum that we had a few months ago. And a bunch of us in the county wanted to get together and progress the ideas that we all learned from the Zero Waste Forum. Formed the Zero Waste Wasatch Back Group. We met once about a month ago. Great turnout. So we're meeting again, and it'll be great.
Okay. Andy, Scott, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, the two largest school districts in the Wasatch Back will approve their fiscal year 2027 budgets tonight. KPCW's Christine Weller reports neither district plans to raise your taxes.
Park City and Wasatch County school districts will adopt fiscal year 2027 budgets after public hearings Tuesday. Expenditures for Park City School District's proposed budget total almost $246 million, which is about $16 million lower than last year. The district plans to spend about $42 million on instruction, counselors, student transportation, and administration. Another $21 million is set aside for capital projects, including ongoing construction at Dozier Field and the Treasure Mountain Sports Complex. Expenditures in Wasatch County School District's proposed budget total almost $136 million. That's about $11 million higher than last year, due in part to hiring teachers for the new Deer Creek High School, as well as expanding literacy programs. Wasatch reports salaries and benefits account for almost 90% of proposed expenditures for its general fund. Almost $96 million is set aside for instruction, which includes teacher salaries and benefits, as well as textbooks and software. Another $13 million supports district and school administrators. Neither district plans to raise taxes for fiscal year 2027. However, homeowners may see a bump in what they pay if their home values have increased. Park City's budget hearing begins at 6 p.m. Tuesday. Wasatch's is at 6:30 p.m. Both include opportunities for the public to provide input. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And as a former Park City Ski Team athlete who had advanced from local competitions to the World Cup circuit, Elias Lewis was recently named executive director of Park City Ski and Snowboard. He began ski racing after his family moved to Park City in 1976. He excelled in the sport, progressing through the local race program to earn a spot on the U.S. ski team. Injuries, however, cut his competitive racing career short. He went on to get a degree in aerospace engineering and worked for Lockheed Martin, where he helped design NASA's Orion spacecraft. He later earned an international MBA and moved his young family to France. After returning to Park City, he worked with his father, a local architect, on a couple of real estate developments. Lewis was the owner and operator of a small short-term rental business, Cooper Wind Property Management, when the ski team job opened. Reflecting on the opportunity to lead the organization that helped shape his life, Lewis says the timing felt right.
When I thought about it, and I, you know, have so many great feelings and really consider most of my life lessons and what's been able to drive me from ski racing as a young kid under Bob Marsh and, you know, those early days,
All the great coaches that helped me understand, you know, what you can control and what you can't control, I think is one of the biggest lessons that I took out of it. Always through my career in life, I've always gone back to those lessons that I learned on the mountains here in town. And so when this opportunity came up, it was good timing for me.
He's still transitioning from his other businesses, but he expects to be fully settled in the new role beginning August 1st. Former Park City Ski Team athlete, two-time NCAA ski champion, and U.S. ski team member Adam Cole has known Lewis for most of his life and believes that he is a strong choice for the position.
Park City Ski Team was our lives growing up, and it made a huge impression on us. So I'm excited that he feels that way, and he can bring that passion back to the team.
Park City Ski and Snowboard oversees 9 competitive programs, including alpine, freestyle, ski jumping, and ski mountaineering. Lewis says one of his goals is to better understand each discipline and help unify the organization. The organization serves about 1,200 athletes, making it one of the largest youth sports organizations in the community. Lewis says he's eager to get started.